Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. It was June 1981 when a mysterious, often fatal illness was first detected in the U.S. By the end of 1985, every region in the world had reported at least one case of AIDS. Much has happened in 40 years. Staggering loss, increased hope and understanding, and billions pumped into research toward care and a cure. A person with HIV-positive status today has a completely different outlook for his or her future compared to four decades ago. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a young woman dedicated to educating people about HIV/AIDS prevention, care, and well-being. First, we're joined by Dr. Sebastian Ruse, Chief Medical Officer for Chase Brexton Healthcare. He's also served as Site Medical Director for the Chase Brexton Mount Vernon Center and is Director of the Infectious Diseases Center of Excellence. In that role, he developed a treatment program for hepatitis C, which drew national attention. He also assists other Chase Brexton providers in certification from the American Academy of HIV Medicine. Welcome to On the Record, Dr. Ruse.
Thank you, Sheila.
So first, give us some history of Chase Brexton and talk about the breadth of care patients can find there.
Chase Brexton is a federally qualified health center, which essentially means it provides some care with a focus on primary care to everyone. But different than other FQHCs, Chase Brexton has a history that is deeply connected to the history of HIV. Chase Brexton opened in 1978 as a volunteer-driven STI clinic for men. And then with the beginning of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, became a center known to treat HIV-positive individuals until later on it opened its doors for everyone and became a federally qualified health center.
And so is HIV care a big part of what Chase Brexton does now?
It still is. We're still one of the largest providers for HIV care here in the Mid-Atlantic area. It's only a smaller portion of the total portfolio of care that we are providing, but it still is one of our strong centers of focus.
How did you personally come to specialize in care for HIV/AIDS patients?
My medical career actually didn't start with med school. I was trained as a nurse before. In the late 1990s, one of my first rotations when I was in nursing school was in the inpatient ward of the local university hospital, the HIV ward. And so that was shortly after treatment has been vastly changed in the HIV arena. And that was when HART became available, which means highly active antiretroviral therapy, which for the first time allowed to treat patients effectively and make their viral loads undetectable. However, at that time, a lot of patients were not able to take their regimens because they had so many side effects to it. And from that, I transitioned into med school, and I met during my residency, when I was in my first year, a physician in Connecticut who was the first one who treated HIV-positive individuals in the 80s in Connecticut. And I rotated with him for a month in his office, and his approach of treating the LGBT community and HIV-positive individuals was so different, so without stigma, so welcoming, so open-armed, that I decided in that moment that's what I want to do. And a couple of years later, I pursued a fellowship in infectious diseases with a focus on HIV outpatient care. And I transitioned into that as being my full-time job. And I moved to Baltimore and joined Chase Brexton.
So your experience in HIV/AIDS healthcare spans decades. What big changes have you witnessed?
Tremendous changes from, you know, having grown up as a child and adolescent of the big fear around HIV/AIDS, not quite understanding who can get it and knowing it's a disease that is pretty much a death sentence within a couple of weeks to months, to my experience as a young nurse in the nursing care unit with medications that theoretically work and theoretically can make HIV undetectable in the blood, which means making it dormant and stopping it from the disease to progressing. However, these medications at that time were barely tolerable to anybody, to now where HIV can be treated with one pill once a day, which still contains the whole cocktail of what is needed to treat one person, but just in one pill, with little to, in most of my patients, really no side effects.
That's Dr. Sebastian Roos, Chief Medical Officer at Chase Brexton Healthcare. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the history of HIV/AIDS care and awareness. This month marks 40 years since the first cases were detected in the U.S. Talk about your work with the American Academy of HIV Medicine. Why is personalized care so critical for HIV/AIDS patients?
So HIV has become a chronic, very well treatable condition. And there's a lot of evidence that shows if HIV is being treated by primary care physicians, the outcome on for HIV, as well as all other chronic conditions, is a lot better than if it's broken up into specialty cares. And so AHIVM, or the American Academy of HIV Medicine, allows for primary care providers to develop that specialty knowledge in with this HIV focus, and at the end to become credentialed and therewith really being able to show that they have that level of expertise. And so what we've been doing here at Chase Brexton is we've been training many of our primary care physicians to acquire this knowledge and then really help become the primary care provider and the HIV care provider of their patients.
What are some of the misconceptions of having positive HIV status today?
Unfortunately, there are still many. There's still the stigma about HIV being this untreatable or difficult to treat condition, which again, it's not anymore. One pill once a day, and if that treatment regimen is being followed, that leads to an undetectable viral load, a dormant infection, a normal life expectancy. That's one. Then the other myth is still around.
Let me interrupt. When you say an undetectable viral level, that obviously is a scientific term, that not everybody gets the full meaning. That means not just can you not detect it in the blood, you can't transmit HIV.
Yeah, that's correct. So viral load means how much virus can we detect in the blood of someone who is infected with HIV. The lower the number, the slower the disease progression, and the goal of any treatment in HIV is to make the viral load undetectable, which compares to a dormant disease stage. So essentially we freeze the disease. It can't progress. It can't cause any harm in that person's body anymore. And we also recently learned just a few years ago from two large clinical trials that someone who has an undetectable viral load, that virus is truly so deeply dormant that it can't be passed on to anyone through sexual contact.
So treatment is prevention.
That is correct. That's the term that we use. Yeah, treatment nowadays is understood as having two main purposes. One, protecting the infected person from the disease to progress. And two, as a public health purpose, to prevent the disease from being passed on to anybody else.
I interrupted you. You were talking about misconceptions that people still hold about HIV.
Yes, thank you. Another big misconception is again, referring to drugs, the tremendous amount of side effects that people have experienced in the past that is still stuck with many in many people's head. The subjective side effects of having abdominal pain or diarrhea, not being able to tolerate the medications causing changes of the person's appearance. The old drugs could have potentially caused something that is called lipodystrophy, a loss of fat tissue on the arms and on the face, and an accumulation of fat in the abdominal, in the belly area. And so this was perceived as being very stigmatizing for people in the past. And for many people, a reason of not wanting to go on the medication, because they were worried, even though they were Their blood numbers showed they were healthy. They were undetectable, but everyone from the outside was able to tell that they were HIV positive. And so that misconception still sticks around. The new medications don't do that. Someone who takes any of the new drug regimens doesn't have to worry about it changing their appearance, their physique. It really only does good things. It stops the virus from replicating, which means it's inactive, it's dormant, and that person has a normal life expectancy and a normal quality of life.
Do you encounter any overly optimistic misconceptions?
Well, you know, maybe in the younger generation. I'm in my 40s. I grew up in the my childhood was in the 80s when we grew up with the fear of HIV/AIDS being a dangerous, untreatable condition. With nowadays, people, younger people who don't have that fear anymore, there might be maybe the concern of, you know, not having any respect anymore of the condition, so to speak. You know, all I need to do is just take one pill a day. That's maybe the only thing I can think of.
How would you describe where the fight against HIV/AIDS stands today?
Thanks to the new medications, we actually have seen a lot of progress in the last couple of years. So when you look at the number of new infections per year, they're still high. That's undoubted. Just in the United States, the CDC estimates somewhere between 36 and 37,000 new infections per year. But that is two-thirds less than what we have seen in the peak of the epidemic in the late 80s and early 90s. So there has been a lot of progress, but we need to wrap up our sleeves again and all work together, because we actually have a chance now, thanks to these medications and the knowledge that we have acquired, to end the epidemic. If we test every adult person should have been tested at least once in their life. If someone who is sexually active and participates in any sexual behavior that might potentially expose them to HIV, they should get tested more frequently. It's really important for everyone to get tested and know their status, because if we diagnose early HIV as early as possible and put everyone on treatment as early as possible, we tremendously reduce the amount of transmission of HIV.
So we've been talking about how the options to treat HIV/AIDS have improved vastly. Do you think there's a possibility for a cure?
Well, you can already consider the medications that we have. They are kind of a theoretical cure, right? They're not eliminating the virus out of our body, but they're making it completely inactive. So in that context, you know, we have something like a theoretical cure, so to speak. But for having a true cure in the future, I truly believe we will have something at some point. But not to get too scientific, HIV, there's a reason why we've been dealing with this for 40 years, and we still don't have a vaccine, and we still don't have a true cure. The virus is very complex and very complicated, and it integrates into our bodies, into our DNAs. And so finding a way of extracting it out of our DNA, that is something that is really completely new, and we haven't found a way yet of doing that. But I am truly convinced that that in my lifetime, we will see a cure.
What do you most want listeners to understand about HIV/AIDS?
I want everyone to understand that it's important to drop the stigma around it. You know, it is something that is all around us, but it is something that we have learned to deal with very well. And if we lose the stigma, if we create more awareness, if we create more understanding around it, and people feel comfortable talking about it, you know, people will feel comfortable to go to their primary care physician and say, hey, I haven't been tested for HIV. Why don't we do it today? If we lose the stigma around it and we have more conversation and more understanding about it, of how powerful these drugs are, and understanding that people living with HIV have normal life expectancies and are not considered a risk to anybody, we can have better relationships, we can have better friendships, we can have better partnerships, and we also have a better chance of truly eliminating the disease in the next 10 or 20 years.
Dr. Ruse, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Sebastian Roos is Chief Medical Officer of Chase Brexton Healthcare. We've been looking back on 40 years of HIV/AIDS education and care. Tomorrow, Saturday, June 5th, is the annual HIV Long-Term Survivors Awareness Day to honor those who have been living with HIV for years and to raise awareness of their journeys. And Chase Brexton is honoring the ongoing fight against HIV/AIDS with its 2021 virtual Baltimore AIDS Walk and Music Festival. It starts this Sunday, June 6th at 5 p.m. and runs through Monday. We've got details about it at the On the Record page, WYPR.org. Short break now on the record. Then we'll talk to a young woman dedicated to educating people about HIV/AIDS prevention, care, and well-being. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. 40 years ago this month, the first case of HIV/AIDS was diagnosed in the United States. We just heard some of the historical background and the current status of the fight against HIV/AIDS from Chase Brexton Healthcare's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Sebastian Roos. Joining us now is Carmeleta Abel, a longtime healthcare advocate. She works to educate people about HIV/AIDS prevention, care, and well-being. She has been a peer educator at Morgan State University and served 2 years as a peer navigator at Chase Brexton Healthcare. Welcome, Carmeleta.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So first, tell us about your work with Chase Brexton. What is the work of a peer navigator?
So the work of a peer navigator is to spread awareness about HIV/AIDS and STDs just in general, also to educate others about PrEP and PEP, which are different medications that are used to prevent you from contracting HIV, testing individuals for HIV, spreading the word about the care that is rendered at Chase Brexton, just to really educate the community about the services that Chase Brexton offer and ways that they can protect themselves from contracting HIV.
How did you get involved in this work? How did you come to learn about Chase Brexton?
So Chase Brexton actually been my healthcare facility for years, since I was like a teenager. So I stumbled across the Power Project when I was looking for an appointment after graduating college. So I was already a peer educator at Morgan. So I was already kind of doing the work, and then I wanted to do it further. And I just so happy to find a position for the Power Project as a peer navigator. So it got me more into it, and I loved it.
And the Power Project is?
The Power Project is part of the case management department at Chase Brexton. So basically, we go out into the community, educate people about HIV, PrEP and PEP, and what Chase Brexton in general just have to offer. Do a lot of free rapid HIV testing, usually have a lot of events on the outside. We'll give away like free condoms, on the go testing, educate them on how to get on PrEP and what PrEP is and what PEP is in case they were exposed to HIV.
You have also been a strong voice for You Equals You. What is that organization about?
So You Equals You means undetectable equals untransmittable. I am someone who's HIV positive and undetectable. So I was asked to be a part of the commercial for that, you know, just to kind of get people an insight on how it is to be undetectable and, you know, not to transmit it to partners, to kind of get people more of an awareness of how life is on the other side.
You are HIV positive yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
But undetectable.
Yes, ma'am. Which means I'm non-contagious to others that I may have relations with, or just non-contagious in general. So it's just like I'm just a normal person and the virus is suppressed.
That's Carmeleta Abel. On the Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her advocacy work for HIV/AIDS awareness and health education. You are taking your work abroad with the Peace Corps. Tell us about that.
Yes, I'm so excited for that. So I applied to go into the Peace Corps last year. And my application is currently, I'm going through the process of going to Botswana, Africa, come February of next year. I know they're taking precaution due to COVID, but I had received my job duty. So basically what I've been doing at Chase Braxton, I'll be doing it in another country, educating individuals about HIV, ways to protect themselves, about PrEP and PEP. I'm definitely going to come up with different ideas, different ways to educate the kids, go into those urban areas and give them the resources that they need to get the healthcare that they need. So I'm like really excited about that.
How long do you expect to be in Botswana?
2 years, possibly three if they ask me.
How does awareness in Botswana compare to awareness in the U.S.?
Their numbers are very high. It's mainly women who test positive for HIV, and they're in certain villages or certain communities that don't have the resources that they need to be treated or just to know what their status is in general.
Why is your HIV/AIDS advocacy work so important to you?
It's important to me because a lot of people don't have that support system. Like a lot of individuals who become HIV positive are either they're afraid to go to their family because they don't want to be judged, or, you know, they just don't know. They feel like life has come to a halt after they're diagnosed. And I'm here to tell them that that's not the case. You can still live life just as you were before, you know, being diagnosed with HIV. And, you know, there's medication out here that can help you to become undetectable. And then just also just to educate those who are not aware. It's a lot of people that still think that HIV is a death sentence, or, oh, I don't want to be around her because she may give me something that I don't want. And to kind of tell them like the ways that you can contract it and the ways that you cannot contract it. So my goal is just to really educate those who are not very knowledgeable about it, to get them to understand how they can prevent themselves from contracting it. But most importantly to me is just to support those who are positive and feel like they don't have a support system, and just for them to know, well, I'm here either way, and whomever will be on my team is here for them as well.
Your options are so different than was the case 40 years ago when the first cases of HIV were detected. What are your thoughts about that?
I know for me, I feel really blessed because I came in at a time where it was definitely possible, or I was diagnosed at a time where it was definitely possible for me to become undetectable very quickly. Whereas to back then, it wasn't like that. It was, okay, we may be able to get you to survive for a few months. Whereas to now, they found the correct dosages. They found the right medicine. Is the variety of different medication that can keep you alive really forever, and you can have kids, your kids not have it. So I just feel like it's came a very, very long way, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Thank you, Carmeleta, and good luck in Botswana. I hope you'll keep in touch with us about your work there.
Thank you, I will.
Carmeleta Abel is an HIV/AIDS educator and health advocate. It was 40 years ago this month that the first HIV/AIDS cases were detected across the U.S. Chase Braxton Healthcare is honoring the ongoing fight against HIV/AIDS with its 2021 virtual Baltimore AIDS Walk and Music Festival. It starts this Sunday, June 6th at 5 p.m. and runs through Monday. We've got details about it at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Chase Braxton is also collaborating with the Baltimore City Health Department on the virtual HIV/AIDS Museum, a digital storytelling experience. Links to information about that and to health resources at Chase Braxton, all at the On the Record page. I'm Sheila Cass, glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.